Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios Stories. Let me ask you a question. What do you get when you take someone who's got two bachelor degrees already and going for her third and has a sense of humor and loves to tell stories? Well, of course, you get Madonna Kilpatrick. That's who. She's going for her third bachelor's degree in molecular biology. She's got a podcast of her own, and she's also on the spectrum. So sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll see you on the other side. And welcome back to another episode of Inside the Asperger Studios. Today I'm joined in this episode of Stories with Madonna Kilpatrick, who is on the spectrum and has her own podcast as well. So welcome to the show, Madonna.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited that we could finally make this work.
Yeah, finally excited to have you on the show. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Gosh, well, I'm a transplant. I've been all over the country, but I was born in South Carolina and I'm presently headquartered in Seattle. Well, right outside of Seattle. But you know how when people live in New York City and they live in Queens or Brooklyn, they say they live in New York City and then you find out they live in Brooklyn, which is totally fine. I live on the east side of Seattle. And so it's just easier to say that I live in Seattle. But my I end up traveling around the country a lot, which gives me a lot of opportunity to look at things. And ever since I studied anthropology, when I studied anthropology, I focused on media studies. But ever since I started traveling across the country more and more, it's really given me a unique perspective, I guess, on the different ways that people live in the country. And so I like that I have a unique viewpoint because of my status on the spectrum, but I'm also really liking just the perspective that I'm gaining on just how different and diverse everyone's thought processes really are. When I'm not traveling, and I'm not traveling at present, I'm studying molecular biology at Bellevue College. And as much as I hate it right now, my podcast Off the Spectrum and my journal Off the Spectrum are in a state of hiatus while I'm figuring out my academic schedule. I'm throwing up a couple of posts this weekend. I believe we're recording on January 23rd, but it's been sporadic so far, which is very frustrating to me because I've missed the opportunity to be creative over the past couple of years. I'm usually a stage performer. I do stand-up and storytelling and a lot of children's and musical theater in Seattle. But ever since we've shut down, there haven't been a lot of live performances. And it's kind of frustrating for people who really, really enjoy expressing themselves.
No wonder why when I was listening to your podcast, it sounded like you were telling a story almost.
Oh, yes. Well, that's my hope. Because the journeys are off the spectrum. I originally called my journal, I based it off of the title of a Lily Tomlin one-woman show called The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe. And I don't want to be condescending about it anymore, but I really enjoy looking at the world and looking at the differential of perspectives. I remember when I was really, really young kid, that show Fraggle Rock that they've rebooted recently, and his uncle Traveling Matt, who went into outer space in the world of the silly people. And if you can remove yourself from the human perspective that we take for granted, and look at the world in its really for just how bizarre it really is. And examine it from an entirely objective viewpoint, you can appreciate more about the world around you than you would have been able to otherwise. And I really like the opportunity to do that. I just don't have as much of an opportunity as I would like anymore because of the academic schedule. But again, I'm also really enjoying the academic schedule too. I guess I wish there were more hours in the day.
Yeah, I mean, what's funny is when I went to school and when I came back, people asked me, why did I take the harder classes instead of taking easy ones? And what they don't realize for someone like us on the spectrum is easy, you don't learn anything. When you're taking the harder classes and you're being pushed and you're being challenged, that's when you start to learn.
I know. And one of the elements of the MBS Molecular Biosciences program that I'm in, I hate to think that I'd gotten this far in my academic career without actually experiencing any academic challenges, but I found myself just frustrated to the point of panic in the early days of my actual hands-on laboratory work because for the first time, I had absolutely no idea what was going on. And it was simultaneously just terrifying and exhilarating. But it made me realize that before that, in all of my other classes, I was really just going through the motions and jumping through the hoops. And it wasn't just boring. It was almost a little insulting that, you know, and I hate that this is always a kind of think about people, autistic people, that we're not concerned with other people's feelings. And the contrary is true. I don't want to accidentally insult anyone with anything that I might be saying. I don't want it to seem as though the lack of challenge and my feeling insulted was because anyone was intentionally insulting me. I recognize, you know, kind of when we get into the puzzle piece debate and how there are plenty of people on the spectrum who don't like using the puzzle piece as a symbol for autism.
Well, because I'm one of those people now. I mean, I've been educated. I have a friend of mine who's been on the spectrum for a while, and I never knew why people were against it until he said the puzzle piece represents acceptance. He's like, we don't need acceptance. We need awareness. People need to be aware of us.
Well, I like to, if I can think about it this way, and I absolutely agree with you, because I mean, for people who aren't aware, just to revisit, and we can go back and look up the name of the fellow who pioneered ABA therapy, which is not, is the same person who pioneered gay conversion therapy, and these things don't work. They function under the fundamental conceit that if you don't like someone's personality, you just wipe it out and build a new one. And that's kind of horrifying. And so he was the one who first suggested this puzzle piece as a symbol for autism because it was such a puzzling condition. And I absolutely agree with you that as autistic people, we don't care to use that puzzle piece to describe or define ourselves.
Now, let me ask you something.
Well, but if I could just finish as we use that, the neurodiversity infinity symbol to define ourselves, I'm more and more seeing autistic allies continuing to use the puzzle piece. And I look at that. And when I think in terms of the evolution of thought, the puzzle piece for them, for the allies of autistic people, it does kind of seem like an appropriate symbol because we're not the ones who are puzzling, you know, and they are the ones who are puzzled by us. They are the ones who want to know more. And the puzzle piece as a symbol for an ally, I can kind of get behind that and see that as their way of saying, we want to know more.
Yeah,
as long as that was what's happening.
When I first started with my blog before my podcast, I had the puzzle piece up, and my friend's like, "Why do you have that?" And I'm like, "Well," he's like, "the community is against it," so I changed it. And then all of a sudden, with my podcast and the fact that I'm on TikTok as well, I've noticed a lot of people don't like the term Asperger's.
No, Hans Asperger was a Nazi.
Yeah, but my feeling is, listen, that is the past. Yes, I understand he was a nasty person and he coined the term, but it's over with. Things have changed. And I have people saying you can't use the term Asperger's in your name because it's harmful and hurtful. I'm like, well, that's your choice, your feelings. Stop putting your agenda on me.
Well, there are a couple of different ways of looking at that. I was just thinking about the other day, I saw somebody, the present heated state of debate being what it is. I saw a tractor trailer and the payload, the driver had spray painted on the side of their payload, "My freedoms don't end where your fear begins." It was something like that. And I don't agree with that, because one of the functional conceits of civilization is to avoid making other people afraid. And so the idea that I'm not allowed to just swing my fists willy-nilly because I could hit somebody in the face with them, mm-hmm. which isn't fair or right. And so the conceit that my rights absolutely end where someone else's safety begins. And when we talk about Asperger's, the terminology that's used to describe people on the spectrum and what we use to describe ourselves versus what other people use to describe us, it really comes down to what's making us safe, what's keeping us from being safe, what's giving us agency in the world, and then really, how much do both sides of the argument really understand where the other side is coming from? At the end of the day, this is all about wanting to bridge these communication gaps. And it's not out of a sense of antagonism that we seek to ally ourselves and use symbols to communicate. And so, I do become concerned when I look out at the autism community. And I mean, because there are subtle little details about the way we present ourselves and about the way that we speak. For example, I don't always refer to myself as an autistic person, though I do prefer that, because it's not a disease that I have. It's a thing that I am.
No, I usually, when someone asks me, I say I have ASD.
Mm-hmm. But even then, it starts to get problematic because we get into the realm of what qualifies a disorder.
I mean, yeah, that's another thing. I've seen a lot in a lot of the Facebook groups. I've seen people say, I don't like the term disability. I don't call my son and say he's got a disability.
Right.
And I'm like, well, then there's the problem there. There lies the problem, because it is a disability. It is a mental developmental disability. You got to acknowledge that it's a disability if you want support.
Well, there is the cultural framework conceit, because if you acknowledge it as a, well, if you frame it as a disability for the purposes of receiving support, it then diminishes your status in society. So mm-hmm. we run into some very difficult issues, because fundamentally, I can't think of autism as a disease or a disability. I think of it as a differential operating system. The idea that neurotypical people are running a version of Windows and we're mm-hmm. running a version of Mac OS.
Yeah, the old standard Mac versus OS, Mac versus exactly. PC, Windows versus Linux, Linux right. versus Mac.
And the idea that a person needs different considerations in the community is not necessarily a function of their being a lesser person.
Well, I mean, I have a great shirt that I got from a woman who's got kids on the spectrum. I'll give you the link later. She's in Australia and she sells autistic and ADHD neurodivergent shirts. And one of the shirts I got from her says, "I'm wired different."
That's the exact terminology that I find myself using. Our systems are wired differently. And that differential is not necessarily a disorder or a disease. When you consider a person who uses a wheelchair is not necessarily disabled if they live in an environment where they can access everything in their wheelchair.
See, I think the problem is, and I had a, and I was, and a friend of mine brought this up. He's one of the biggest ASD advocates in England, and he's got a huge YouTube following. It's an invisible disability. People look at us and they don't see that disability.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost the imposter syndrome because they see us at our best, but they don't see us at our worst.
Right, because we're really good at hiding and masking. And yes, they absolutely take our masking tendencies for granted. And, you know, I take my masking tendencies for granted too. But I don't know if it's fair to say that I prefer masking. It's just that I had the fortune to grow up with some cotillion training. And one of my special interests growing up as a child was etiquette and protocol and studying the Miss Manners and Amy Vanderbilt good manners guides, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I found it very comforting that there was kind of a playbook for human behavior. And so sometimes I accidentally sound like Girl Frasier, I guess, but I find what I'm doing isn't necessarily masking. I'm not trying to deceive anyone, but I have a certain social framework, a personality scaffolding that I erect when I need to support myself enough to go outside and deal with other humans.
I mean, one of the things I'm totally against, and you'll hear this a lot brought up in my shows, depending on who I talk to, is I'm totally against masking for the reasons that why should we pretend to be something we're not?
Yeah.
Number one, it is exhausting because
because
you go out and the minute you step outside your door, you're masking until you come home and you're wiped.
Right.
And then you got to find your sensory home, your little sensory area to wind down.
And get your spoon meter refilled.
And it takes a lot out of you.
Yeah. I mean, it begs the question, as I start to analyze my behavior and think in terms of the rigidity of my protocol practices, am I really masking at all? Yeah. Or is my day-to-day behavior just, it's certainly overly poised, I think.
I mean, a friend of mine had told me, I don't know how I got on disability, considering my version of autism is very minute. I'm almost on that fence between NT and ASD. I can live both sides. I've only had one meltdown in my entire life. I do have acute sense of smell and hearing. Mm-hmm. I don't have an aversion to light or taste.
Sure.
I do, but my major problems are spatial and filtering.
Sure. And I mean, you might argue out in the terrain that I present as fairly neurotypical, but I'm sure I have meltdowns all the time.
I do have sensory overload issues at times. Absolutely. where I'm I can read my body very well.
Yes. I envy people who have a good sense of their body read and they know exactly what their sensory sensitivities are, because sometimes I still flounder and I have to really identify what it is that set me off because I don't immediately know.
Anyways, let's get on to the real questions at hand. Where did you grow up?
Well, like I said, it's not fair to say equally grew up in South Carolina and Seattle. I've lived in Seattle longer, but I have childhood memories of South Carolina and I still have a little bit of a Southern accent that doesn't go away.
So what was it like growing up and going to school with autism?
Well, since I did not know that I was autistic until I was an adult, weird. We can go with weird. I had a lot of opportunities because of the cultural frameworks of the South that I don't think that I would have had if I'd been a young child in Seattle. For example, the cultural frameworks of churches are such that you have a lot of access to artistic and creative endeavors through your church. And one of the things about a kid in the South is if they're weird, you can't put a finger on it because you don't know what autism is. If you've got a weird kid, you throw them in the theater and they become creative. And that's where they threw me. And that worked out great. And, they never knew that I was, and I sometimes wonder just how different my academic career would have been because they might have tracked me into special education programs, but because they didn't know that I was autistic, I routinely scored in the 99th percentile of all standardized testing, and they always put me in advanced classes. And so I graduated with a 3.0 average from high school, and I went on to college, and I had the opportunities to advance myself academically, even though I have always kind of struggled with the dimensional frameworks that we associate with the, I kind of think of, I have my interior mechanisms and then I have the primary dimension, which is this world we're all having to deal with.
All right. What motivates you, inspires you, and drives you?
Oh gosh, could I put a finger on anything right now? It always seems like there's a will of the wisp in a particular lyric from a song or a show that strikes my fancy. And then the frameworks of it really inspire the things that I'm doing. I just got into, there's the CBS show Ghosts that just started. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy that. And that got me to look up the BBC version of Ghosts, which is on HBO Max. And they're very different shows, but they're so good that like when you see The Music Man and you realize the song 76 Trombones and the song Goodnight My Someone are the same song. They're just in different tempos and they're both good songs. They're just very different. And, so there will be subtle little things. Mm-hmm. It's all I like to describe it as a will-o'-the-wisp. Something catches me and then leads me down a path of information and knowledge, and every answer leads to five more questions. So
all right. What is the best compliment you've ever gotten?
Oh, I don't know.
All right.
It's still novel enough for someone to tell me that I'm pretty, that I still like it. But I always appreciate it when people appreciate my intelligence, because often, if you lead with the fact that you're autistic, or people can just straight up tell that you're autistic, they're generally inclined to underestimate you or set very low expectations. And so I appreciate it when
I've had that experience. I mean, I graduated, I come home and I'm talking with a friend back at school and she's like, can I ask you a personal question? I'm like, sure. I'm an open book. We're friends. She's like, do you have autism? And I was kind of thrown back and I'm like, yeah, what made you say that? She's like, well, I work with younger kids who are on the spectrum and you exhibit some of their behaviors, the over-friendliness and not knowing what to say or what's appropriate and what's not.
Right.
I'm like, yeah. She's like, are you doing anything about it? I'm like, not really.
You know, what would be the thing to do about it? I'm sorry. Is there some sort of a device that I should strap myself into to? And I'm sorry. Yeah. Am I doing something wrong necessarily by exhibiting these behaviors? Or
No. She meant well. I mean, I understand where she was coming from. She probably meant, am I seeing a therapist or something to help me out? I mean, school was tough for me, especially being thrown in. I went to school for my master's in England.
Oh wow.
Yeah, so I did something most Aspies wouldn't do.
I
threw myself across the sea into one of the most advanced topics I could take.
Oh yeah.
And made friends with people from all over.
Well, that's delightful. Of course, anyway, I love any opportunity to go to England. So,
yeah. Anyways, what's your biggest failure and what did you learn from that experience?
Oh, what, today?
Or just in general?
Oh, in general, I'm not sure I can pinpoint any particular failures. You always learn a little something new every time you make it weird in public accidentally.
All right.
Oh, okay. People don't respond well to that. I'm always courting a little bit of failure when you get up on stage and test out jokes at an open mic. You're like, okay, well, no, nobody liked that. Good. Okay, write that down. Good to know what doesn't work. And we said in scientific endeavors, when something doesn't work, you need to make sure that you write that down. Null results are still results.
Yes.
And all so, right. Yeah. Hard to say if there's necessarily a big failure, because honestly, every step of the way, there's been a little bit of a stumble. And you know how you'll have one of those little social stumbles, and consciously, I'm sure no one has thought about it or will ever think about it ever again, but it will wake me up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a state of just extreme shame. Going, do I need to change my name now? Why? Oh no, I ruined my social standing by saying the wrong thing. No, so yeah, no one big failure, lots of little ones.
Tell me about 3 influential people in your life and how they impacted you.
Gosh, do I have to know them personally? It's hard to say. No,
not personally, it could be anybody in your life.
Gosh, a lot of autistic people, it's not fair to point at Brent Spiner, though the actor is the one who plays the character of Data on Star Trek. We all kind of lean on that a little bit because that felt like a litmus test to me when those of us who've ever seen Star Trek The Next Generation and saw the character of Data, not necessarily the character of Spock in the original series, the character of Data, and looked at the way that he was fascinated by humanity and human behaviors. And, you know, that was kind of a guiding point that, like, there's nothing wrong with me because I don't get it. I'm trying to understand. And that's more than a lot of people are doing. Any other influential people in particular, and it's not that there aren't any, it's that there are so many, it's difficult to put a finger on them. But when I'm thinking in terms of autism in general, it's hard to point to real life role models because you're always looking at fictional characters because you don't really see, it hasn't been until recently that we've seen notable people identifying as autistic and giving you something to look up to. It's only, you know, kind of seeing people who maybe present as autistic and wondering if maybe they are. But in terms of outside of the autistic community, just in terms of, inspirational on a personal level, very inspired by Stephen Sondheim and just the huge, gigantic body of work and the tremendous loss and the anger and frustration that that's a person that I'll never be able to work with. And I need to reach outside of the scientific community. I mean, who wasn't inspired by Betty White? I love vivaciousness. But then there are also scientists, of course. I can't put a finger on a particular scientist because I was just writing a song about Democritus and his postulations and how they led to Ernest Rutherford and Niels Bohr's contributions to physics and our understanding of science. And so every scientist stands on another scientist's shoulders. And so all of the scientists ever, I guess, are very inspiring to me.
All right. What makes you feel inspired or like your best self?
Oh, gosh. When I wake up calibrated well, when I have a good, when I wake up well calibrated and I have an agenda that does not get sidetracked. I when I'm able to follow through on my routines, I feel my best self. And when I feel my best self, then that's when I feel the best.
All right. finished a sentence. I'm at my best when
I'm performing.
All right. If you could turn back time and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell her?
For God's sake, exercise more. Please exercise more. The thing is, I did exercise quite. I was a dancer when I was in high school, but I got a bunch of, you sprain your ankle, then you recover from that and immediately sprain the other ankle. And then you do something else. And then I got in a car accident in college. And so my movement has been hindered, but oh gosh, please exercise more. Right. But I mean, I inspired by something I read the other day that, you know, your future self isn't looking at you with disappointment. Your future self is looking at you with understanding for how difficult things were. And they're just hoping that you do your best.
I'm gonna quote that. All right. If you can have a billboard with anything on it, what would it be and why?
Well, I mean, just the, you know, generally the frameworks of my social media and blog, and, you know, you want your URL on everything, but when it comes to the actual billboard itself, the only thing I can think of, what came to mind was I got asked the question of what Disney princess would you be? And I had to think about it, and Tinkerbell is not a princess, but no. I stand by it anyway. Okay. and the idea that I'm Tinkerbell because maybe I'm constantly sprinkling chemicals on people. Maybe I'm constantly getting stuck in keyholes, but one thing's for sure. If you don't applaud for me, I'll die.
Okay. What do you think the world would look like in 5 years?
I really, really hope it'll be cleaner.
All right.
We're working on, you know, the people of science out here working on means of micro dredging plastics and particulate out of the water and cleaning the air and figuring out how to repurpose plastics and taking care of carbon emissions. I have a bit of faith that things could be cleaner because we have cleaned them up before, but I have some optimism. If right. we stay on track and we keep a progressive mindset, I'm optimistic that things could be healthier and cleaner in 5 years.
All right. What was your favorite subject in school?
Theater.
Okay. Would you consider yourself an introvert or an extrovert?
Oh, gosh. The functional nature of introvert versus extrovert, you know, there is a kind of a biological component to it. And when you're an extrovert, you're actually gaining energy from your social interactions. And when you're an introvert, you have that reserve of energy and you're spending it as you're interacting. And so I absolutely feel that I have the motivations of an extrovert, but I definitely have the biology of an introvert.
Okay.
I have a limit.
All right. If you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be and why?
Well, not just the one thing. Gosh, I have this pantheon for which I'd like to be remembered. Iconoclasticness is never one thing, is it? I want to cure disease. I want to help people live longer. I want to help usher in an era of peace. I want to write a Tony Award-winning musical. I want to sing songs and braid flowers into people's hair. But what do I want to be remembered for? Ultimately, I want to be remembered. And I want to be remembered fondly. I want to be remembered for loving people. And I want to be remembered because people loved me.
Nice. Now, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are now in life?
In a plane. I'm presently, I'm in Florida. I'm in the Caribbean, and I did take a plane here. How did I get here? Well, you start in the theater, and then you take a right in anthropology. I kind of feel like I'm the I'm studying humans the way Jane Goodall studied chimps from a distance, squatting in the bushes with a clipboard. waiting for them to come to me. But just realize that you're fascinated with humans as a whole, and then kind of lose your professional motivation and direction, and then get locked in during an international pandemic and watch people suffer and die, go crazy, and decide that you need to study biology and longevity processes.
All right. Now we get to the more fun questions, the questions people really want to hear.
Okay.
What is your favorite word?
Why?
What is your least favorite word?
Of the words I'm willing to say right now.
You can say anything you want.
Oh, no. I mean, there are some words that are my least favorite that I absolutely will not say, but we can go, gosh, what's my least favorite? Oh, right now, the only one I can think of is moist. Nobody right. likes that.
What Why? Turned you... All right. What turned you on creatively, spiritually, and emotionally?
I guess music primarily.
All right. What turned you off?
Oh, gosh. The word that came to mind was intolerance, which seems like just such a pithy thing to say. But if we're all having a good time, but then somebody suddenly turns it hateful, that's right there.
All right. What's your favorite cuss word?
I don't do that on... Both of my parents were Sunday school teachers, and my mother was the director of education ministries at our church. My mother was the Sunday school principal. I think I'm biologically incapable of swearing while there's a microphone on.
All right. What sound or noise do you love?
There's so many. How could I pick? I like a lot of different sounds. They all have their musicality. And so I know I can't pick a favorite sound.
All right. What sound or noise do you hate?
Our neighbor comes home at like 1:30 in the morning with their car. I appreciate that you like music in your car and you must be coming off of work, I'm assuming. But we're asleep and it's a small neighborhood. And when your car is running and you open the door and the sound blares outside of my bedroom window and wakes me up and wakes my mother up and the dog barks, that's my least favorite sound. That.
All right. What's your favorite color?
Oh, there's green and purple and they fight.
All right. What's your least favorite color?
Orange. And I feel bad for orange because of that, but it's the least one.
All right. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I'm kind of in multiple professions. So what would be one that I would like to attempt? Oh gosh. Roller derby.
What profession would you not like to do?
Republican strategist.
All right. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Oh, boy. Congratulations, you got the high score.
When you arrive at heaven, who would you like to meet?
Oh, they're all lined up. There's a pantheon of celebrities. There's the loved ones who have preceded me. There's Democritus. I want to check in. Particularly Democritus. I'm hung up on him. He's a philosopher from 2500 BC. Or maybe not 25. I'll check that out. 100 years ago, certainly, but he was a contemporary of Aristotle. And he was one of the first to postulate that atoms are mostly empty space and particles whirling around. But Aristotle, his more popular contemporary, said, no, there's earth, there's wind, there's fire, and we've got four elements and you're an idiot and you need to shut up. And because of that, we have the philosophers of the era quote Democritus, but mostly to say that they disagree with him. And none of his total writings have survived. And so, you know, there's somebody that I'd like to check in with.
All right.
See what's going on there.
What books do you recommend my audience read?
Oh, boy. I am a disgusting, horrible grocery store, dime store, romance novel junkie. But other than those, what moved me? The novel Wicked, not the I mean, I love the musical Wicked, who doesn't? But the book series Wicked that I'm not completely through, very different and a very interesting approach to a female character and mm-hmm. to the Oz mythos. And it really just kind of takes a familiar cultural construct and makes you think about it differently. And it's very entertaining. That was one book. The first book that I read when I graduated from college, was The Hunger Games. And that was pretty good. but I'm not going to recommend that one, actually. That was pretty, because two just spring to mind that are more important. I mean, that was pretty important, but here's to me, more important to me. One of them is, Kurt Vonnegut Jr.'s Breakfast of Champions. And that really spoke to me, the rhythm of, and it's my understanding that it's different from his other books, conceptually, and the rhythms of it are very different from his other books. But it spoke to me, and the way that he would punctuate with drawings or cartoons. So it really expanded my view of the formats of storytelling. And the other one is Hunter S. Thompson's Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. That was really, really definitive work for me, not just in the nature of his writing and the Terry Gilliam movie, which it dovetails with it pretty neatly. Just the way that the book was made itself, the way he was given a task, but he went off on a tangent, and that tangent was so productive and philosophical and profound that it may have fundamentally changed the world in a lot of ways. And I feel like we as autistic people have a lot to offer the world in that respect.
All right. And finally, where can people find you on the web?
Well, you'll find me at www.madonnaots.com, MADONNAOTS.com. I have a slightly more cumbersome URL that's off-the-spectrum.com, but Madonna OTS, that's where you can find me on the web and on Twitter and Instagram as soon as I get back to updating those things, because college.
And that's it, folks. Madonna Kilpatrick, podcaster, autistic, and one funny person. Thank you so much for being on the show, Madonna.
Thank you so much for having me.
Not a problem.
Live. You know it's a good life, so don't go waste it. Stop a second, cause I know you can taste it. Tell me what you wanna do, and then we're gonna make it happen, cause nothing can replace it. Don't need no million to have a good life.